So guys, all of you, welcome. Please do share where you are from, et cetera, et cetera. And then switch your default of just panelists to panelists and attendees so that everybody is able to sort of see if you are asking any questions. Andrew and I would start the session, and Rupa has just joined as I see her coming up on the screen. But any of you, as you have any burning questions, you would like to join the panel at any point in time, just as we go along, we would start with a couple of questions with Andrew and Rupa, and then please let us know on the chat box and I could invite you in to the panel to join us here. Both Andrew and Rupa here at this point in time, part of my cohort in systemic coaching working towards PCC, ACTP. Rupa has already had about 60 hours of training. She works with a corporate in the BFI space. And Andrew has been working with corporate executives, and he also works with students in a renowned university. Basically, what I just told them is what I expect the subject of this session to be, that if there are any questions that come up to them that they are finding it difficult to handle, and it's the same thing goes for any of you as well. Usually the way that I put that is questions that you are afraid to ask. Maybe you think it's too silly to ask, or you are the only person who's got that kind of an issue or whatever, and you would be surprised how many else do. So just come up with whatever those questions are. What is the pattern that is discomforting you? It's almost like, as a client, we say in coaching journey, the client comes from a disempowered reality, and the client is looking to shift that into a more empowering outcome. And the same thing is true of coaches as well. Pretty often we get stuck in disempowering realities when we are working with clients and we find it difficult. And somehow it has become also fashionable to say that these clients are uncoachable. And I truly dislike that term because it's very derogatory. I don't think there are any clients out there who are truly uncoachable in any sense of the term. It may be that some of them don't want to be coached. That's a different thing. That's up to them. You cannot push anybody to be coached. But otherwise, they come from a state which is not really one of great positivity. They are coming from some major issue or another. And in that process, when they come to a coach, what they look for is that unconditional positive regard, as Carl Rogers puts it. And for us, that's the most important thing, the client-centricity focus of Carl Rogers, which is about unconditional positive regard, empathy, at the same time, the coach's own value system, but at the same time being non-judgmental. And in that space, I do not think the word that someone is uncoachable is in the dictionary of client-centricity. All I can say is, if any coach really believes that their client is uncoachable, then they should avoid coaching. If they are afraid of the heat, don't come into the kitchen. If you're afraid of the water, don't go into the shower. That's about all that I would say. So I know that sounds a bit harsh. It may sound like, you know, I'm sort of taking it out on some eminent coaches. That's not the intent, but I genuinely believe that no coach can believe in a credo which says that a client is uncoachable. We have a problem from time to time. We find a client difficult. We may find a client irascible. We might find a client who's refusing to do the follow-up on whatever has been agreed. But then if you start really looking at it from compassion and unconditional positive regard, we may be able to find there's something happening out there that potentially may be able to help, maybe a different approach can help, a different tack can help, sometimes a different coach can help. So these are the possible things that we need to look at. The same way that ICF and others in the ethics say that if you find that there's something that you cannot handle, pass it on to someone who is more of a specialist in some way or another. I think that's the only thing that we can do, rather than terming such people as being uncoachable and so on, as if they are some kind of outcasts, which is an extremely derogatory term from my perspective. So let's start with this. Rupa is here, Andrew is here, but I'll start with Andrew. And Andrew, as I said, if there is something that in your experience of coaching that you find that you have struggled with at some point in time, or there's a pattern that is repetitive in whatever way, since you do a lot of executive coaching as well as coaching with young people, what would that be?
It's such a good question and such a broad question, but what comes up to me first to as a response is we are, I don't think we're in the advice giving business. We are following our client's lead. If our client says they want to go in a particular direction, some part of them is saying that, but another part of them may have all sort of walls and barriers and locked gates to go there. So if our job is to lead them towards where they want to go to a certain degree, or invite through their own initiative and their own intentions to go in a particular direction, then we ask questions. And I find that I can sometimes feel very uncomfortable asking a question that feels like it's pushing a client, even though the client has said, oh, I want to go there. You know, so the client says, for example, I need to spend more time with my team. I'm getting some feedback that I'm not spending enough time with them. And then they make a commitment to spend more time with the team in a coaching conversation. The next time I speak with them, how did it go with those feedback meetings or those conversations with your team members? Oh, I didn't get around to doing that. So the pattern continues. And the question becomes, how much do I want to push as a coach? So I don't know that I'm afraid to ask a question, but there are times when I recognize that I'm pushing this client and she doesn't want to hear it, or he doesn't want to hear it. And yet it's my job to ask the question. I believe it's my job to ask the question. What was in the way of that? What might you need to change in order to make that happen next month? Is that still important to you? Or to what extent is that still important to you? So pushing the client through questions, but even pushing, I don't even think is the right word, because I don't see it as my job to push. I see it as my job to reflect back. But if she said it's important, then I'm asking a question saying, what was it that came up that prevented you from doing something that you believe is important? And then sitting in that silence of discomfort that often comes up as a result of that question. So I don't know that I'm afraid to ask the question, but I can sense the discomfort, especially if I'm tuned into the client and what will make them uncomfortable.
Yeah, okay. I'll answer this question in a slightly different way, and it may not really be an answer even. If you remember, we had a session in our cohort where I was working with an individual who's an executive, and he was struggling with a career choice. And he started with some premises. And as we explored, he shifted into something else, which was radically different. It was the opposite end of the spectrum, as it were. So at that point in time, I felt that it was my responsibility as a coach, very respectfully, to bring to his attention that this is what you said at a point in time, mm-hmm. which was extremely important for you. At that point in time, if I remember right, this was a person who really seriously is looking at coaching as a possible option as a career, an uncle career. But as he looked at it in depth in terms of what else it is, and he discovered there could be some practical difficulties, and then it was about my work-life balance is more important, and therefore I need to do this. So, which happens to all of us. These are dilemmas that we face. Sometimes these are polarities for which there is a third option. So all that I really did was to put it back to him, saying that this is what you said at one point in time in a brief conversation of just about maybe 15 to 20 minutes. And this is what you've been saying later. So what's really going on here? And that led to a pretty powerful opening. And there were some people who sort of said, oh, you know, is that the right thing for a coach to do? Were you being directive? The answer is no, I was not being directive. I was not trying to push him into any kind of a solution. But at the same time, I did feel out of that basic unconditional positive regard, which may be a cliche, but it isn't to me. It's a real truth. That if I want to do something positive to help the client be empowered, then I need to bring out also the inconsistencies in the logic system or whatever's happening. So like going back into your specific question, so this particular client has said that, yes, I would do this and I need to do a sort of particular thing, whatever it needs to be done within my team, and I'll do it. And then the person comes back and says, no, I haven't done it. I agree with you that it's difficult to sort of take it up in a way, oh, no, you should have done it or whatever. That's not the job of a coach. Mm-hmm. But a very simple thing that I would start with it, yeah, you know, you found it extremely important that you do that. And you said it for this reason, this reason, this reason. And now you have found that you have been unable to do it. So is it okay for us to explore why that is happening? And that could potentially provide some opening, a window, in terms of trying to understand what is going on. At least that is what I would start with, using the client's own words. And here I'll go back to what we keep talking about in this forum as well, the approach of the LASI, listening, acknowledging, sensing and sharing, and inquiring and exploring, and perhaps using sensations, emotions, and thoughts. It could even be, depending upon the situation, okay, you were not able to do it. So if you look at that point in time when you are trying to do it, we're not able to do it, that experience, would you be willing to re-experience that experience that you went through? And what was it that you felt in your body at that time? And how would you label that as an emotion? And what were the thoughts coming up? It can tell you a lot, because there could be many, many unconscious interferences that may be holding the client back. And this is one of the areas where very many people seem to think that this is what leads to the so-called uncoachability of the client. Oh, the client has agreed with me that this is what they will do. The client hasn't done it. So it's like three strikes and you're out. Okay, I give you one more chance and you don't do it. I give you one more chance. What chance are you giving the client? Nothing. The thing that we need to do is to figure out if someone wants to do something and in some way they are stumped that they are not able to do it, there's a reason why they are stumped, the reason why they are blocked. What is that reason? If you can help them to find that reason, that could open up a lot of things. So I don't know if there's anything else that's coming up for you as it comes. Or Rupa, you can share something within your...
If it were easy for the client to do it, she would have done it already.
Absolutely.
And it's difficult, if not impossible, for us to help the client find a way around or through that barrier if we're judging them or impatient with them. And I think that's the unconditional positive regard piece.
Yeah. I mean, we all have worked within the corporate space or life space with multiple people. And we all have difficulties in being able to communicate with other person, even with our own spouses. So, and when we turn to a counselor or a coach or someone, we turn to them because we are unable to. And it's very easy to say, okay, go and talk to that person. If it was that easy, they would have already talked. They are finding it very difficult to talk for whatever reason. And you need to figure out what that is holding them back. And you need to address that situation. So Earl says, as a coach who was previously a senior executive, how do I ensure that I'm not leading the client to my preferred direction? Am I addicted to feeling the need to provide a solution, since that is what I was previously paid for? What happens if the client is not serious and takes? Okay, I mean, Shibu, let me answer your question and go to Earl's, which is a far more, let's say, common kind of situation. I don't know, but when you, Shibu, if you say a client is not serious, how do you determine that client is not serious? How do you know? How do you know the client, kind of coach, client is taking coaching lightly in those cases? Like what Andrew is talking about here is a person who said that he will or she will do something and the person is not doing it. Does it mean that the person is not taking coaching seriously? Does coaching seriously mean that the coach's word is God's truth? Is coach God? You are there to serve the client. The moment if you start feeling the client is not serious, then you don't have any regard for that client. I'm sorry to be harsh, but I would like all of you to understand this first. You cannot even have these words coming up in your vocabulary, in your mind, that a coach client is not serious. If the client is not serious, the client would not come to you. I mean, I'm really talking about a situation where you are a professional coach. I'm not talking about in peer coaching where, okay, you may be coaching another person just for practice or whatever it is. All that can happen. But why would someone want to pay a serious amount of money and come to you and spend their time if they are not serious about it? So that would be my answer. And I'm sorry if my tone is a little harsh, but that's how I really feel when these kind of issues come up for me. Meena, you said sometimes they give the reason that they had other business pressures. Of course, surely. That's absolutely normal. The client's job is not listening to coach and doing what the coach does. They are in a job where they are required to do 24/7, especially these days, various kinds of things. So they are facing a problem. So as a coach, as coaches, we need to understand that they have business pressures, they have family pressures. I mean, if you look at your own life, wouldn't you have that? Or if somebody just gives you a piece of advice or say, oh, I'm coaching you and this is what we have agreed what to do, or you're not doing it, are other pressures more important? The answer is yes, of course. I mean, these are all coming out of some kind of feeling that, I don't know, where we get that feeling from, that if a client agrees to do something because in that session they do find it's extremely important for them and they do realize that, they find it meaningful, they agree to do that, and then they find actually they are unable to do that. So what? That's part of the coaching process. It's for us to try and help them move past that barrier that they are facing. If it's a business pressure, if it happens, yes, it's okay. And I have Rupa here. Rupa, I don't know whether you want to come on the video or not, but Rupa was my client. Now, and of course, she's also a learner with us. She's learning to be a coach. And she can recall situations where we worked together for almost about a year, year and a half. The company sponsored her. And there were multiple situations in which, yeah, she may have agreed, but she wasn't able to fulfill what she agreed because she had a job to do and this wasn't the highest priority for her. We have a session once a month, maybe 1.5 hours, and then we meet after a month. And surely there are multiple things that come in the way and she can do what she can. Rupa, would you like to answer this question? First of all, Rupa, are you there? Hello. Okay. Looks like, I don't know whether she has a problem or what it is. If there are any follow-up questions, I can answer. Earl, I mean, going through your question, you know, this is the biggest problem that for all of us who've been in the corporate space and who've been paid, as you very rightly say, for providing solutions. And that's what we are therefore. In fact, when I got into coaching, it was based on a suggestion, as it were, with a person who was kind of a mentor to me. And when I was at Crossroads, and he said, look, you've got all this experience of running companies, chief executive and all that kind of stuff, and you've been a troubleshooter, you've been a great problem solver and so on, so you would be a fantastic coach, which totally misses a point. A coach's job, as Andrew started saying, is not about solving problems. It's not about providing advice. It's about creating really the awareness in the other person. So if you are really looking for, I mean, what you're really saying is that am I leading the client to a preferred direction? So let's do this. Let me invite you onto the thing. Let me, because this is a very, very common problem, and I really would like to understand your perspective on what's going on here. Promote to panelists. So Earl, if you don't mind, if you can come to the panel and then explain to me what the situation is. Thanks, Earl. So would you like to tell us why you are feeling, or what is it that tells you that you are trying to lead the client to your preferred direction? In what way is that manifested, and how do you evidence that?
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Earl. Yeah.
Okay, morning to the Kocharia community. Morning, Ram. Morning, Andrew. Yep. So whilst I am coaching, within me, I am feeling that the person either don't have the information, or that, you know, my previous experience is almost a solution is bubbling within me. And that consciousness is, sometimes could be very overpowering. So at the end of the coaching session, you know, I'm concerned about whether the way in which I designed the question was in fact, a leading question. Although I was trying to make sure that I didn't do that, but the end result is so similar to what I was thinking. But I feel as if, there's something within me that, wants to give a solution. So is a battle during the coaching. So is that taken away from my coaching presence? So that, that is my struggle.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, that's a pretty human reaction, right? From childhood, we have been brought up with that we try and provide other people's solutions, especially men, especially. Women are not so bad. My wife constantly reminds me, I never asked you to provide a solution. Why don't you just shut up and listen to what I have to say? So men especially, we are not good listeners, and we think that we have the answers, and we would like to let everybody know that we are wise and we have the answers. But now that you have the awareness that that is what you're doing, my question therefore is, what is it that is preventing you from not doing that?
So I'm selling coaching services, and when the client, there's a feeling that I need to provide something for the client, and if they leave the conversation without some sort of solution, I feel that there's that battle within me wanting to provide some sort of value, but I'm aware that is not what I'm supposed to be doing. So it's an internal struggle right through. When the person leaves without some sort of guidance in terms of what is the next step.
Okay. So again, since you know what is the right thing to do, but let's look at it slightly differently. which is a much more fundamental issue. Why do you think it is more important than in coaching that we partner the client to develop their own solutions and answers, rather than we as coaches, in some senses, guiding? I mean, we can use very nice, subtle words from the dictionary, synonyms, we can find out them to the answers, which we have already sort of thought about. Why do you think that that is important? For what reason?
Maybe it's just a knee-jerk reaction that, you know, this is some solution, but you know, is it that I'm feel, you know, I feel that, you know, there's some superiority, so therefore, you know, so that is the, you know, I mean, it's a great question, Ram, but I can't say that I have the answer in terms of why this is happening.
I'm not asking you why this is happening. I'm just asking you, why is it important that we do not guide the client? Why is it important that the client develops his or her own answers and solutions?
All right, so I just repeat it. Why is it important for the client to develop? Because you want them to grow.
Yes.
You want them to be able to, I suppose, you know, use the coaching as an opportunity to move their, you know, their own, you know, just to use the word, their professional potential, to maximize it. And when I provide a solution, I'm in fact disempowering them.
Exactly. You're 100% correct. That if the client were to develop their own, they were to learn and develop their own solutions and they grow, and which is actually what the ICF competency, the new competency CC8 is about, learning and growth, which happens out of awareness and the way that the client, coach partners the client. So we know that. Unfortunately, what happens is in leadership, we believe that we are paid to solve problems because we find it easier. It saves us time. Actually, it doesn't. Because one of the things I learned when I was working with high potential managers, young people, they were complaining to me that, look, Ram, I'm spending 12 hours, 14 hours a day sitting here. And so I say, doing what? I'm offering solutions to these people. So I used to tell them, in that process, do you find, are these people learning and growing? Exactly what you said. They said, no, they keep coming back to me. They say, hey, boss, you are the one who knows all this. I say, sir, okay, if tomorrow, if you're willing to listen to me, can you please do this? For the next 2 weeks, anyone comes to you, don't refuse them. Tell them, before you come into my room and sit in front of me and ask me to provide you a solution, or provide me to provide you a solution, you need to provide me with 3 or 4 alternatives, which we will discuss and we will co-create. And his first thing was, if I were to do that, they will think that I know nothing. I said, it's up to you to decide. Even if you were to like look like a fool initially, and if it's going to develop them, is that what you want to do? That each of these people are your responsibility for you to grow? And the first sign of leadership is how do you, the first thing that I was told when I entered into this great company, which mentored me, which was my alma mater, was that your first responsibility is to find your successor and groom that successor within the next couple of years or whatever it is. Only then you will move on. And that's what your job is. If you were to do that, the only thing that you would do really is to try and help them to learn and grow. The same way here, you are no longer perhaps in that leadership chair where your fundamental responsibility is to provide succession. But our job here is not to provide solutions, but to help the other person grow. That is unconditional positive regard. The moment we have that in mind, each time you sort of having an inner dialogue within you, it'll be almost like a slap in your face. Stop it. And one of the things that I advise people to do is this. You try to focus on the client. I don't know if you're familiar with photography. This is something as a metaphor which comes up for me, is that when you go into a very low aperture, you blot out everything in front of you except that which you are trying to focus. All else is blurred except what that central piece. The same thing should happen to you. And if you're really focusing with that intensity on the client and the client, what the client is saying, not just in words alone, and then the voice tone, the energy, the emotions that are coming out, you won't have the time to have that inner dialogue. It's a skill that we need to develop as coaches. And which is what we keep telling people in our cohort like Andrew and Rupa, that I call it LASI and ACT. You listen. So why is it listening in ICF competency called listening actively? Why isn't it called listening passively or just listening? Because that listening needs to initiate a response, which in turn allows the client to learn and grow. It's not just listening, or listening, as you said, a knee-jerk reaction in which I provide some kind of an answer. Oh, this is, wouldn't it be great if you do that? Of course, it's very simple. But your DNA is very different. Your experience is very different. What the client is could be very different. Mm-hmm. And any experience that you have may not really be relevant to that person. And because you are in a chair which is higher than theirs in a metaphorical sense, they will want to listen to you. And that to me is ethically wrong.
Yeah.
Because then we are misusing our position. If each coach is willing to accept that, that it's ethically wrong for that coach to be able to lead a client in some way, which in turn will inhibit their growth, their learning and growth, and also the anchoring of what awareness that happens within them, I think we will stop doing it. Like you, we are aware of it, but we don't go sufficiently into detail why we should not be doing it. Moment you realize that, I think the answer comes up automatically. If you have to say something, I would be grateful to hear from you.
No, that was very helpful in terms of the that lens on trying to focus in and keeping yourself there, whether it's through the active listening. The whole exchange was very useful, and I'll give somebody else a question, but I really appreciate the time that was spent, Ram.
Okay, thanks a lot, Earl.
I just want to add one thing here, if I can.
Sure.
I think that as coaches, it's incumbent on us to be as self-aware as possible, right? What's going on with me? Am I impatient? Am I aggravated by this client? Am I judging them as not serious? Whatever that might be going on with us, right? Mm-hmm. Which does, of course, we're human beings. But the word that comes up for me in hearing this example, which I'm aware of frequently, is what I want to be asking myself or be aware of is, what am I attached to? So I think, as someone who also sells coaching services, am I attached to the client getting some aha moment and feeling delightful when they finish the session? Thank you so much. This has been great. And if we don't get that, I'm somehow disappointed. Am I attached to some epiphany moment or something like that? So for me, it's about being self-aware about what am I attached to? There's times when conversations are going to end. And for me, it's going to feel like, I don't know. We're not sure what they took from that. I did the best I can. I'm not sure what they took, but I can't be attached to a certain result that I think is most important, or else my eye is not on the ball. That's what I would say that I think is very, for me, that's a key dimension to just keep in my awareness. So when I hit that guardrail that says, wait a minute, I'm finding myself wanting to ask this question over and over again. For me, that's an indication that I'm attached to that.
Okay.
And that great. I think is a problem. That takes away from what I can provide the client.
Okay. So I'll take away active listening and watching to see what I'm attached to. So thank you, guys.
Yeah. There are a couple of other, thanks a lot, Andrew. That was very valuable, because what does happen very often is you see this, especially while training people, the person who's learning to coach says, oh, but the client felt very good about it. And the client said great things about me. Yeah, possible. And the client would probably say great things about a mentor who provides solutions or a consultant who provides solutions as well. But that's not the purpose that we are there as coaches. It is to really create their learning and growth, and which is what is going to sustain them. And which then leads to the point that coaching is a process where truly it's about not knowing. The moment you start thinking that I know what to tell this person as a client, I think we are losing the plot. We are no longer in the coaching journey. We are on a completely different journey. What are the other questions? Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Rupa. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can hear you finally. I mean,
cool.
I just wanted you to sort of chip in on earlier when there was a question. I'll just put the question to you again. Meena Jatiani, she said, the clients sometimes give the reason that they had other business pressures and therefore did not do what they had committed. Now, I would like you to answer from the perspective of someone who had been a client earlier, and now you are on the coaching journey, what your response to that would be.
Well, to be honest, having gone through this journey personally, it's been of great acceptance, great struggle for acceptance, I would say, to actually action something that we've been discussing all along. So I think we all have a lot of ideas in our head, and we know what is the ideal situation and the ideal action we need to take, or we are very good when we are giving that same advice to others. But when it comes to actually implementing, it is a struggle. Some of the things I think that helped me in this journey was more to be honest and face my fears. Basically just acknowledge what we are going through and put it down in black and white on paper. I think finding the right words to actually put your feelings, there's a tool called the universe of emotions. So I think if you're struggling to find the right word to label your feeling, that's the best tool to use. So basically just put down exactly how you feel. And, you know, as Ram explained a while back on the Lassie concept, just put that down writing, because that's when it'll actually hit you to know whether you're frustrated or you're angry or you're irritated. So once you have all of those emotions out there, it's very easy to identify what you're dealing with. So I think the process and the journey of accepting what you're going through is very, very critical in the beginning stage. And despite all the awareness and realizations you will have during those coaching conversations, actually implementing that is a lot of discipline. If you are sincere to what you would want to achieve, and depending on how strong your goal is, you will take that step. And that is exactly why the coach is there, to partner with you along this journey to make sure that you do take the action. So I would not necessarily just focus on the action part of it. I think the realization, the acceptance of what you're going through first, then the realization, the awareness, and then the very conscious way to take those actions. And if you can do it alone, great. If you need help, I would highly recommend you do that with somebody if you need some support. Having said this, I think just a couple of things to add, Ram.
Before that, I think we are going somewhere else. Okay.
Sure.
Now, the question arose because there was an earlier question, which was that if the client is not serious and takes coaching lightly, what happens? And my answer to that was that a coach cannot take a position that a client is taking coaching lightly or not taking responsibility, because a coach's responsibility to be unconditionally, positively regarding the client. And so the next question was this. So my question to you specifically, that when you were a client, it could have very easily happened that when I was your coach, that you had committed to doing something. And that what you had committed to, while you had every intention of fulfilling that, you could not do it, either because of work pressure, family pressure, or whatever it is. And so we probably started all over again with the same thing. And I can easily remember several things that had happened because we had to go through it multiple times before you were able to move forward. So it's not because of any disrespect that you have for the coaching process, but it, so for looking at it from a client's perspective, so what would you, how would you explain that? Why is it happening, and why is it therefore equally the responsibility of the coach to be able to recognize that and help the client?
Sure. I think many times it's at least for me in my journey, I think it is reassessing the situation and probably thinking option A is better than B. And then you kind of swing around it if you're not necessarily sure about the approach you need to take. So I think from a goal perspective, it's basically the result towards which you're putting in your efforts. That I think was pretty much evident and very much on track in the coaching journey. But I think the difference that that made was, you know, the process that we have to, the approach that we have to take to reach towards that goal. So that is always a bit of a struggle because you have multiple approaches to take, and deciding on one best approach, irrespective of, you know, how the situation or the players in the situation adapt, I think that is always going to be evolving. So one has to be very firm and be very clear about the internal, external factors, what you are going through versus the controllable and uncontrollable factors around. And it's always going to be a changing dynamic world around you, right? So that is precisely where you've got to be very firm on the step you need to take, the rationale behind it.
No, again, one minute. Who is the you here?
It's me as a client. Yes, okay. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just giving my example.
If you are unable to do it, so let's say you are now in a coaching space, you are a coach, right? So there's a client who has faced the same situation as you had in the past, multiple pressures, and they're not able to do it. So what is the stance that you would then take as a coach?
Sure. I think one thing that comes to my mind, Ram, is to be, to have ruthless compassion than just being kind and, you know, as you say, sitting in the well with the person. So you can have very ruthless compassion and be there for the client. But I think you have to encourage the behavior where we don't have to be a fire for every mountain blocking your way. But we should probably look at if an opportunity arises to just be like a water and just find your way towards the freedom. So there's no need to fight every battle. But I think in the entire thing, you just have to make sure that the process to get to your goals is what is important to derive the results. That for me was the most important factor, I would say.
No, okay. So would your stance as a coach be that the client does not follow through in some way what has been agreed, and therefore the client is not taking the coaching process seriously?
I think it would depend on the stance the client would take, Ram. Because I would, depending on the conversations and interactions, you would definitely trust the client to take this seriously and see how the person is going on. But if the person is going back and forth and coming up with excuses of not necessarily taking action, then either the person is not really convinced, or maybe I'm crossing the line, but probably don't have the courage to take the action or not necessarily very convinced. So I think that might be the root cause. Identifying the root cause of why the action is not being taken, that needs to be resolved for any kind of progress to be made in this journey.
Sure. Therefore, if the client does not have the courage to take the action that the client has agreed to what extent would the coach then become responsible to help the client?
I think it's a matter of congruence as well, Ram. So we can partner with the client, but end of the day, the approach and the decision has to be done by the client. So
Of course. I mean, the client is not saying that he or she doesn't want the coaching. The client is looking for the coach to help. But if the coach is saying that, look, I can't help you anymore because you don't seem to be taking action on what you are saying. So, I mean, you keep talking about something called ruthless compassion. I don't know what that means, but the point is, if you genuinely had compassion for the client, what would you do? I'm sorry, I'm pushing you because you've been a client as well. I know you're a coach.
Yep.
So if at a point in time, you were unable to, in some ways, make good your promise of certain actions, and if you, for instance, now are in the coach's chair, what would your mindset be?
It would be more about, you know, some of the questions that one needs to ask a client. Simple things like, you know, just trying to understand who you want to be as a person, and then trying to see what is actually blocking you to let go and to be that person, right? So basically drawing boundaries, you know, trying to understand what is the kind of dependency the person has, what are the stakes the person could have personally or professionally, and just trying to lead, not necessarily lead, but trying to make the client aware in terms of what is in it for the person, for the client at the end of the tunnel. So if he or she can see the light at the end of the tunnel, then the process becomes much more easier. So you spoke about unconditional positive regard, Ram. So irrespective of what the client goes through, I think we kind of trust the client to make sure that that he or she is invested in this process, and hence they're coming back for these sessions. So in that process, trying to make sure the person is equipped with all the necessary skills and thought processes to be able to reach that decision. Till that extent, I think this is going to be a continuous process. If it means a ping pong ball, so be it. But as long as the client is coming back and making some kind of effort, I think the push has to remain.
Okay.
I would still be committed to that.
Okay, thanks. Andrew, you have anything to add to this?
I'd be curious to know to what extent this action and this goal is still important to them. So, and at the risk of that sounding like a leading question, it's a question based upon what the client has shared before. This is important to me. I want to take action on this. Okay, they didn't take action on this. To what extent is this still important? And they may say it's not important anymore. Or if they say that, then lovely. And if they say, oh, it's still very important, then okay, well, if it's important, then let's talk about some ways you might take action on that. So I think it's about asking a question similar to that. I don't have a magic question, but also asking it in a way that's open, not, well, is it still important to you? You know, in some judgmental, narrowing way, but in an opening way of, okay, well, you said to do that. To what extent is that still important for you? Perhaps it isn't.
That's a great answer, observation, Andrew. And the second question would be, if the action is no longer important, or for whatever reason, the action is impractical for the client, for whatever good reason, is the outcome still important? If the outcome is still important, if instead of this action, is there another action possible? So of course, ultimately it's the client's decision, till the client turns around and says, look, I'm tired of this whole thing, and I really do not want to proceed on this anymore. That can happen too. But till such time as that happens, and it has happened to me, there have been cases where the client has turned around to say that, look, I'm no longer in a position to be able to go through whatever we have agreed. And I'm not in a moment now, but perhaps at a future point in time that I am. If the client says that, that's fine. Then you can't do anything further about it. But till such time, I think if we sign up as coaches, it's extremely important for us to focus on that aspect of it. A couple of other questions here.
Jen, just one quick. I've had a client say to me, actually, just a few months ago, he came back to me and said, I know I said I would do X. And I was going to, you know, speak with this person directly and give them feedback. They're encroaching in my function, whatever it is. And he said, I learned some new piece of information, and thank God I didn't do what I agreed to do. I said, good for you. Tell me more. What changed? So that may be the most lovely thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is why, yeah, in each session, whatever has been agreed at the end of that session, if you are, a coaching journey is never one session, it's multiple sessions. Sometimes it can be as many as maybe 12 or more. And you really start with asking the client, okay, whatever we agreed at that point in time, what's really happened? And if that's not been for some reason acted upon, is there a good reason for it? What do you want to do? Maybe the client says it's no longer relevant for me. Or maybe says the client, I have this problem and let's discuss about how we want to go forward on it. So once we have made a commitment to it, it would be, I think as a coach, I would find it very difficult to turn around to tell a client that, look, you're not being serious. Because if the client is a paying client or even a sponsored client, very often I have this question from people. This person has been sponsored by the company and they've had an agreement with us, the stakeholders chemistry meeting, 3-way conversation that this is what we will do. And now the client is really doesn't seem to be interested in it. Yeah, it can happen. The question therefore is then to try and find out, is there something else that could be of interest to the client? Mm-hmm. And then have another conversation with the line manager, whoever is responsible, and say, hey, could we change the contract to something else? It's not just say, oh, this is what you agreed with the sponsor, and therefore I cannot coach you on anything else. Because I always tell the sponsor that it's the client that you are giving me is my client, not you as a company. And therefore, my ethical responsibility and accountability is to that client. And therefore, my job is to help them. I mean, that's my way of looking at it. So I guess each person has to figure out their own way of looking at it.
Yeah, it could be that the client isn't serious about the sponsor's agenda. That's what they're not serious about.
Yeah, that's right. So the agenda has to change. The agreement mm-hmm. has to change. We'll just take one question. Let me see in the next about 5 minutes or so. As a learner, Tasneem says, I have experienced different style of coaching, some very, very high on energy, some very lively, some are cold. I don't know. I mean, Tasneem, I mean, if I had time, I would have invited you on the panel and probably next time we can do that. Okay, Andrew, would you like to answer the question?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a bit. This came up a little bit in our cohort. Yeah. Somebody had a comment about, after watching the Gloria videos with Carl Rogers, yeah. And what Dr. Rogers' pace was with the client. And for some people, depending upon their pace, they could observe his style as like, you know, watching grass grow. We get impatient, we're used to running at a certain pace. I don't know that there, I mean, I think what's more appropriate is what does the client need? Because that's the agenda. I know that sounds like a cliched response and I don't mean to be flippant with it, but what does the client need? There's times when I need to speed up. And there's times when I'm not saying I always do it perfectly, but there's times when I need to speed up and times I need to slow down because I need to meet them and ride with them. So I think there's a range of energetic levels with which we can show up. And I think we have to be flexible. So I think what's appropriate is wherever we can meet the client, as long as we're doing what we're here to do. I don't know. What do you think, Ron?
The question is, well, I mean, I agree. I mean, Tasneem's question is really, really very interesting because there is, I mean, if the coach is speaking in a very monotonous way, in the same kind of language, asking every question the same way, it's very possible that the coach would put the client to sleep. However, that may be the preferred option of some people. Tasneem, what I would suggest is you should read a little bit about Dr. Milton Erickson, who was one of the greatest psychiatrists. He was a president of the American Psychiatric Society, and the Erickson Institute of Coaching is sort of named after him. Milton Erickson influenced Gestalt in some way, NLP certainly, Richard Bandler, others were being mentored by him. And Bandler once, when he was describing Milton Erickson, said, if you sit front of Milton Erickson, and if he were to talk to you, you would go to sleep in 10 minutes. And suddenly, 2 days later, you would wake up and would start doing exactly every single thing that he did, that he told you to. Because he had this unbelievable way of communicating in a way, in all which I think conversational hypnosis really picked up from him. And there was this other guy, Russian guy, who actually made that very famous. But the tonality of his voice put people in a trance, and he was able to do that. But not everybody can be Milton Erickson. So in a normal coaching conversation, you would vary your tone of voice depending upon the way that the client is reacting or responding. In some cases where the client is being very emotional, the client is being very excited, you might want to calm the client down, and therefore you might carry on with a what might be called a low kinesthetic tone of voice to calm the client down. In some other cases where the client being hesitant or whatever it is, you might want to push it up a little bit and you might sound a little bit more excited. But generally, psychological studies, from what I know, especially NLP-based studies, indicate that a low bass tone of voice, which is called the kinesthetic tone of voice, is usually more effective in calming and empowering the client than something which is more energetic, more lively, up and down, swinging like this. And a high-pitched tone, again, I'm using a slightly different terminology here, neuro-linguistic programming terminology, is supposed to be visual. And very often when we do that, people create visual images. And a neutral tone would be auditory, and a low tone would be kinesthetic. So if you know how to use it, you can use all three at different times. If, let's say, you want the client to think about a metaphor, if you want the client to think about some visual images and take them forward, you could use a high energetic tone. And you could also use words along with that. Hey, can you see this as I'm speaking? Can you sort of look into this better, or something like that, which are words using see, look, view, etc. And auditory, you would use words like hear and listen and things like that, which are flat. And kinesthetic, you would say feel, move, and so on. So it's a whole science by itself. And there's a whole chapter on sensory perceptions and how you use sensory modalities and all that in your linguistic programming. It could be quite useful to go through that, and you would understand more about it. But to answer your question very simply, there is just not one voice tone, one energy state that's going to help, because during a conversation, the coach and the client may go through multiple such variations of tones and energies, and you might want to use different things. So we will stop here. We are pretty much on top of the hour. And what I would request is, we might continue with this process for another couple of sessions where we're answering questions, but we would invite some of you to either raise questions that you would like answered or would like to join us in the panel with some questions of your own, which have been bugging you, which you've not been able to answer, other people have not been able to answer. We will try with your cooperation, with the help of the audience, to be able to answer that. Otherwise, we will be moving on to other subjects in the future of coaching themes. Thank you very much, indeed. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much. Thanks, Rupa. And thanks, Earl, for joining us. And those of you who provided the questions, please do come back to us with questions, either here or in the webinar, in the website, wherever. We would be certainly answering your questions in one manner or another. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thanks very much.
All the best. See you next month. Bye.